Muktaha.
A liberated person.
Api.
Even.
Tavat.
So long.
Vibriyat.
Must maintain.
Swadeham.
His own body.
Arabdham.
Obtained as a result of past activity.
Ashnan.
Accepting.
Abhimana shunyaha.
Without erroneous conceptions. Actually, technically in Sanskrit, that means without pride. Actually, without pride or something like that. Without pride or attachment, abhimana. Anyway.
Yata.
As.
Anubhutam.
What was perceived?
Pratihyata nidraha.
One who is awakened from sleep.
Kimtu.
But.
Anyadehaya.
For another material body.
Gunan.
The material qualities.
Na.
Never.
Vrinte.
Enjoys. Translation. Even if one is liberated, he nevertheless accepts the body he has received according to his past karma. Without misconceptions, however, he regards his enjoyment and suffering due to that karma the way an awakened person regards a dream he had while sleeping. Thus he remains steadfast and never works to achieve another material body under the influence of the three modes of material nature. Purport by His Divine Grace, Srila Prabhupada, Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai. The difference between a liberated and conditioned soul is that the conditioned soul is under the concept of bodily life, whereas a liberated person knows that he is not the body but a spirit different from the body. Priyavrata might have thought that although a conditioned soul is forced to act according to the laws of nature, why should he, who is far advanced in spiritual understanding, accept the same kind of bondage and impediments to spiritual advancement? To answer this doubt, Lord Brahma informed him that even those who are liberated do not resent accepting in the present body the results of their past activities. While sleeping, one dreams many unreal things, but when he awakens, he disregards them and makes progress in factual life. Similarly, a liberated person, one who has completely understood that he is not the body but a spirit soul, disregards past activities performed in ignorance and performs his present activities in such a way that they produce no reactions. This is described in the Bhagavad Gita in the third chapter, text 9. Yogyartat karmano nyatra lokoyam karma bandhanaha. If one performs activities for the satisfaction of the Supreme Personality, the Yajna Purusha, his work does not produce reactions, whereas karmis, who act for themselves, are bound by the reactions of their work. A liberated person, therefore, does not think about whatever he has ignorantly done in the past. Instead, he acts in such a way that he will not produce another body by fruitive activities. As clearly mentioned in the Bhagavad Gita, Mamchayo vyavicharena bhakti ho gena sevate sagunan samati tyoitan rama bhuyaya kalpate. One who engages in full devotional service, who does not fall down in any circumstance, at once transcends the modes of material nature and thus comes to the level of Brahman. That's from the Bhagavad Gita, 14th chapter, text 26. Regardless of what we have done in our past lives, if we engage ourselves in unalloyed devotional service to the Lord in this life, we will always be situated in the Brahma Buddha liberated state, free from reactions, and will not be obliged to accept another material body. Jatva deham puna janma naiti mam eti sojourna. Bhagavad Gita, 4th chapter, text 9. After giving up the body, one who has acted in that way does not accept another material body, but instead goes back home, back to Godhead. Okay, so. Mukto pitavad vipriyat svadeham arabdamashnan abhimana shunyaha yatana buttam pratiyata nidra kim twanya dehaya gunan avrinkte. Okay. So, Om Ganat, Madandasha, Gananjana, Shlakaya, Chakshur, Meditam, Yena, Tasmai, Shi, Gurave Namaha. So, what's being described here is a type of liberated person. Actually, there's two types, Sadhana Siddha or Kripa Siddha. There's another type of liberated person called the Nitya Siddha. The Nitya Siddha does not accept his body according to his past karma because there ain't no past karma for Nitya Siddha. A Nitya Siddha is sent, just like Srila Prabhupada gave the example, that he was in the spiritual world with Krishna, and Krishna said, I want you to come down to write some books about me. And Prabhupada said, what, me go to that place? And Krishna said, yes. And then Prabhupada came. So, of course, we did not say the same thing in the last birth. You know, what, me go to this place? We said, Jai, Hari Bol, let me come back here. Not Hari Bol, but anyway, Jai, let me come here. So a Nitya Siddha devotee, there's no karma. And his body is taken simply as a manifestation of his desire, his bhakti, to serve the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Whereas with the sadhans, there's other two types of liberated people, the sadhana siddha or the kripa siddha. Let me describe what they are. Sadhana siddha means one becomes perfect by performing the bhakti yoga process very, very strictly. Kripa siddha means one just gets some very special mercy from the spiritual master or from the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Can anyone think of a sadhana siddha devotee in history?
I know that 4 or 5 or 6 respondents
are sadhana siddhas. They're Nitya siddhas. The Nitya siddhas. Yeah, the Nitya siddhas. Narada Muni, yes. Narada Muni is sadhana siddha. And actually, he's also Kripa Siddha, but it's mostly Sadhana. There's always Kripa there, but he's Sadhana Siddha. Dhruva Maharaj is Sadhana Siddha. What's that?
Dhruva Maharaj is Sadhana Siddha.
Sadhana Siddha, yeah, that's right.
Prahlad Maharaj.
Let's see. He never really performed any. He got mercy while he was in the womb. I wouldn't say he was Sadhana Siddha. He was more Kripa Siddha. So anyway, there's some examples that are given. Of course, it's not like you say, well, I just want Kripa. Give me your mercy, Guru Dev. Well, first of all, the mercy of the spiritual master is given for a specific reason. It's not, you know, that you just sit back and sleep all day long and get the mercy of the spiritual master. You have to basically do something. In any case, it's yayata mam prapajante tam sadaiva pajamiham. You have to actually approach Krishna. You have to reciprocate with Krishna a certain way to get Krishna consciousness. Not that you're sitting drinking beer one day and Krishna consciousness just strikes you. Oh. You know, some devotee happens to walk in on Sankirtan, you know, doing Sankirtan, and he sees you and blesses you and it strikes you right in the middle of the bar and you become Krishna conscious. You have to desire it. I mean, just like the example, yes, you can get freed from karma by the mercy of the devotee, or freed from karma by agyata sukriti, but you can't go back to Godhead by agyata sukriti. Like the case of Ajamil. Ajamil was engaged in chanting the holy names, Namabash. He wasn't aware of what he was doing. He was chanting the name of his son, Narayan. But he didn't go back to Godhead at that point. He just got freed from the Yamadutas. Later on, he had to perform devotional service and do sadhana. So basically, our process is sadhana. So anyway, so those are the different types of liberated personalities. So what's being described here is very interesting, that a liberated person still has a body. And that's obvious. That's called Jivan Mukta. Jivan Mukta means he's a jiva and he's liberated in this life. So he has the body that he got from his past karma. And also it's mentioned here, there's actually some reaction. So this appears to be a contradiction from what Bhaktivinoda Thakur states, where he states that simply by Namabhas chanting, this is from the Harinam Chintamani and from other books, he says, simply by Namabhas chanting, all karma is finished. He says, even prarabdha karma. Now, prarabdha karma is a very interesting type of karma. That means what you're suffering from at present, you know, that which the body, you know, the body, this is your prarabdha karma. The body that you have, I hate to tell you, is evidence of your crime. Just like if you're a criminal, sometimes you could hide the evidence, you know, bury the body. Not your own body, of course. But you could bury a body. There's actually a law, at least in the United States, you can't convict someone of murder until you can find the body. You ever hear that before?
No.
Something like corpus something. I forget the exact Greek or Latin word for that. Habeas corpus. Habeas corpus, you know, that's the Latin actually. Habeas corpus means basically you better find the body. So, yeah, if you've committed a crime, then you can hide the evidence, bury it. Sometimes, most people, I hate to tell you, get away with crimes. You know, when you see certain criminals in the prison, they're the unlucky ones who got caught. But I would say about 90%, you know, it's like a tip of the iceberg, 90% of them actually get away with it. So it's amazing how many people are criminals. Just like in the United States, 1% of the whole population is in prison. That's a lot of people, isn't it? So you have 300 million people approximately. That means 3 million people are in prison. And so, you know, I guess in most countries it's pretty similar. But if you actually take, you know, extrapolate, you know, the number of people who are criminals, you know, as far as the people got away with it and everything like that, if you consider it's 10 to 1, so like in the United States it'd be 30 million people are criminals. Anyways, yeah, 10% of the population or something like that. So you're extrapolating. So getting back to the point, we don't want to speak about criminology here. They were all criminals. And we can't hide the evidence. Just like when I was a young brahmachari, and I gave that story before, told the story before. I was traveling with a sannyasi, and a sannyasi would chastise me. And I'd say, you know, I didn't do anything wrong. And he would say, you're walking around with a material body. Even if you didn't do that thing wrong that I'm chastising you for, you're guilty. Of course, that's not the way you want to treat people, you know, or attract them to Krishna consciousness, go around the streets and tell everybody they're like hogs, dogs, camels, asses, guilty of the most heinous crime of being envious of Krishna. We should present Krishna consciousness in a positive way. But in those days, you know, people were not as kind and gentle as they are today. Now the sannyasis have reformed themselves. Fortunately for all of you, you never joined during those years when the sannyasis were heavy. Because I'd be yelling at you, telling you all to be brahmacharis, or something like that if it was many years ago. That's why we actually take all my old classes and we keep them locked up so no one can hear them. Anyway, so the body is evidence of our, not only the crime, you know, the envy of Krishna, but also of our desires, because we take a body according to karma and also kama, two things. Kama means lust, whatever. We've given the example before, just like when you buy something, it depends on your desire and how much money you have that determines what you buy or how good a thing you buy. If I have very little money and I want a car, I get a Yugo. You know what a Yugo is? They still have them in Serbia. I haven't seen them around here. And, yeah, there's some here too? And they go for about 5 kilometers before you have to push them or something like that. And if I have a lot of money and a desire for a car, then, you know, I get a Mercedes, Rolls Royce, or Lamborghini if I have a lot of money. You know what Lamborghini is? Lamborghini. I know you like it. You said that with enthusiasm. That means you really like cars. You can read the body language and the intonation. He likes cars. Right? He said, yes! Lamborghini. So actually, that's both things. So this body is evidence of those things. And guess what? When we take up Krishna consciousness, even if you get liberated, you still have the same body. Now, what about the karma? You know, because without corrupted karma, you can't even maintain the body. Prabhupada says that directly Krishna takes over the body of a pure devotee or someone who is performing pure devotional. That was the question last night about, you know, what does it mean to be performing pure devotional service? Either you're a pure devotee or following the directions of the pure devotee. That's pure devotional service right there. It's not that you got to wait to do pure devotional service. If you follow the directions of the pure devotee, you're doing the pure devotional service. It's like the little seed. Within the seed is the whole tree. It's not the tree quite yet, but in one sense it is the tree, because everything constituent part, or at least the plan or genetically of the tree, is actually in the seed, if you allow it to fructify. So we are actually seedling pure devotees. You just have to keep watering with the bhakti process and serving Krishna. So Krishna personally takes care of us, even though we have no karma. We have no karma. That's why Prabhupada did not consider astrology to be so significant. Because a devotee, Prabhupada said, lines change in the palm of the hand every time he chants and dances. The stars, even unfavorable stars are favorable for a devotee. Just like, I mean, my horoscope, Paladnanda Maharaj did my horoscope one time. And he said, came across a particular year, and he said, oh, wow, I see very heavy austerities. Oh my God, I feel sorry for you. So, you know, looking at the horoscope, oh my God. So then what happened is that year I changed to a raw food diet, you know, just for my health. But I wasn't miserable. Because if you're Krishna conscious, even if there's some austerity of the body, not even when there is some austerity of the body, you take it as an impetus for your spiritual advancement, that's all. It's fine. Krishna puts you in a circumstance like that. So even though, you know, astrology, you know, there may be a little, but actually it's an impetus. It's not that astrology can predict when you're going to fall down from devotional service. Like people have this, what, Saturn period? The astrologers, I say, you're going to have a hard time chanting. You're going to break the regulated principles. You're going through the sunny Saturn period. You know, there's a certain number of years. And then you go to the devotee and you say to the devotee, you know, what's wrong with you? And the devotee says, I'm in my Saturn period right now. Can you do some service? No, in my Saturn period. You know, it's just like Hare Krishna, you know, just an excuse. Because we can transcend, just like Prabhupada quotes this verse, mam chiyo vyavacharanda bhakti yogena sevate. Sagunan samati chaitan brahma bhuya yukalpate. One who engages fully in devotional service transcends the modes of nature in this karma. So Krishna takes one's previous karma. This is another example Prabhupada gave. It's like a fan that's plugged in and the fan is going very fast, and then you unplug the fan, so there's some residual momentum in the fan. So Krishna takes the person's previous karma, reduces it to a very small amount, but still gives it in a medicinal way to the devotee. Medicinal means like homeopathic medicine. You know what homeopathic medicine is? Homeopathic medicine is you to actually take poison sometimes, but in such minuscule doses. People know about this? You know, just like micro doses. So it has the opposite effect. So there's like a reaction, a heavy reaction, like you're supposed to die or something. Instead you break your leg. And why does Krishna do that to you. Why doesn't Krishna just like take away everything so you can enjoy life? He does that to remind you of your past. Not that we have to think about our past. Not that we have to talk about our past. Devotees do that sometimes too. They said, you want to hear what happened before I joined the Hare Krishna movement? You know, the brahmacharis talk. You want to hear about my girlfriends before I joined the Krishna conscious movement? Want to hear how I smoked marijuana, you know, took LSD 10,000 times before I joined the Krishna conscious movement? No, we don't want to hear that. But you should remember your past. Why is that? Because it keeps one humble. It helps one remain thankful towards Krishna and the spiritual master. This thankfulness is very important, isn't it? Thankfulness, gratitude. Like we chant. What is it we chant every day before we speak about Krishna? Om Gana Timirandasya. Gananjana Shlakaya Chakshur Miditam Yenitasmai Shri Gurave Namaha. You know what that means? And some of you don't. I was born in the darkness, ajnana. I didn't have any knowledge. I was in ignorance. Om Gana Timirandasya. But my spiritual master gave me this ointment, Shalakaya, the ointment, basically, or opened my eyes, as the metaphorical statement is. Opened my eyes with the ointment or transcendental knowledge. So this attitude of gratitude is extremely important to maintain in relationship to our spiritual master, in relationship to Krishna. And so that's another reason why we keep having these little reactions from time to time. So, Prabhupada said, a liberated person tolerates these things. Of course, there's the famous verse from Lord Brahma. Everybody knows that famous verse? No one? No. About the past sinful reactions. What? Tate nukampam susu vikshamana bunjanivatmakatam vipakam hridvag vapurvir viridan namaste jiveta yo mukti pade sudhaya bhak. And this a very interesting verse, and that's one we should take to heart. That a devotee goes on tolerating, you know, whatever suffering is there. And not only tolerating, he takes the blame for it himself. He says, you know, because of what I did before. Doesn't get angry with Krishna, you know, my Lord, what have you done to me? I remember one time I was starting a temple, and we were trying to build a temple, and it kept raining and raining and raining. I got angry. You know, fortunately, I didn't get angry at Krishna. I got angry at Indra. And I got so angry. Just see what anger will do, you know. I started throwing stones in the sky. You know, what good is that going to do, you know? I said, damn it, Indra, damn it, you know. You stupid. Unfortunately, Krishna protected me. I didn't get hit by a lightning bolt at that point. Because everything was so muddy, we couldn't construct the temple. You know, it was like 2 months just of constant rain. So we have a tendency to get angry. Why? Jayato vishyak punsam sangaste pashu pajayate. Because when we get frustrated, we have some desire. Desire gets frustrated, some plan. It gets, even Krishna conscious plan, it gets frustrated, then we get angry. And people get angry at Krishna. So the point Lord Brahma makes is that one goes on tolerating these things. And toleration is a very interesting point. And he describes what he means by toleration. He says, Hridvag Bapurvir. Not only that you just tolerate, oh, Krishna's doing this to me, damn it, but I gotta tolerate. But one goes on, Hridvag Bapurvir. One goes on like giving his heart to Krishna. With no resentfulness, no anger, no doubt. Actually, that's important. Ashradhanana purusha dharma shasha parantapa prapimam nivartante mritu samsaravartamani. Because if you have any doubt, you know, that's it. You know, you don't progress in Krishna consciousness. That you have no doubt. And actually, another point is what? Yasya Devi Para Bhakti Ta Devi Tathakuru. If one has no doubt, one has full faith. The opposite of not having doubt is full faith. Then everything's revealed to one. Faith in Krishna and the spiritual master, the Vedic literature is like that. So one goes on serving Krishna fully with one's heart, fully with one's words. Vag, like vak. Vak means words, or vag, that's the conjugation of the word. Vapurvir, vapur, vapu, body. If one just goes on serving Krishna in spite of that, then jivetu yo mukti pade sudayabhak, he gets pure devotional service. Or sudayabhak literally means he inherits. He's the right, his devotional service is his rightful claim. It's his, like an inheritance. Like if your father dies and he has a lot of money, it's yours. Unless he leaves it to his girlfriend. Anyway, so that happens nowadays sometimes. But, you know, under previous circumstances, it wasn't like that. So, anyway, so that's how we achieve pure devotional service. Just by going on serving Krishna. Ahaituki apratyata. Without any stoppage. That's a definition. That we go on serving Krishna without any material purpose, ahaitu, without any cause, and apratyata, unstoppable in every circumstance, regardless of the body, what's happening with the body, or other miseries that may happen, you know, adiyatmik, adibodhik, adidaivik. And then we get pure devotional service. Very easy. Very easy process. So I think that's it. So any questions or comments? That's a description of this verse, yeah.
You have mentioned the states in this lecture and go for that. So sometimes devotees are trying to perform some states or even to take some dabs, which is quite high standard for states.
Yeah.
So, but it comes later, then they are not.
They're not ready, I think. Right.
So how to approach this?
If you think you will be Krishna conscious by performing austerities, you're an illusion. That statement is given by Jatabharta to Maharaj Rahugana. Rahuganaita tapasaniyati nachesya nirvapanat grahadva nachandasa naiva jalagni suryar panamaha pada majobi shekam. So he specifically deals with this issue. He says, my dear King Rahugana, you know, Jad Bharat, he was the one who was carrying the chariot for the king, or the, anyway, and he was the palanquin, and he was having this discussion with the king, and he was, of course, the second incarnation of Bharat Maharaj. So he said, one will not be Krishna Khan. Rahugana taught tapasa nayati, not by being a tapasi, I mean performing austerities. Just like we were studying this Indian history, and the Jains had, their 500 Acharya was actually a tapasvi. Does anyone remember who he was? Mahavir, yeah. And he performed so much austerity, he died. Buddha realized that he wouldn't become liberator or whatever by performing austerity, so that's why he came to the middle path. We discussed that in the thing. Because his hair started falling out. If your hair starts falling out, you know you're performing too many austerities or you're getting old. One of the two. Just like in India, if you see children, Indian children with blonde hair, that means they're malnourished. Do you understand? Did you know that? In India, everyone has black hair, except for us Westerners. Except when they put this reddish stuff in the hair. What's that called again? Henna. You know, they put the henna in the hair and like that. But everyone has black hair. But if you see someone in India with blonde hair, it means they're malnourished. Like sometimes you see kids actually with blonde streaks or hair, and that means they're starving. You know, so don't think it's just, oh, how pretty they look with blonde hair. They're starving. So anyway, so tapasa nayati. Yati, tapasa, and then yati. Yati means taking sannyas. Just like there's this town right next to Govardhan called Yatipur, or Jatipur. That's how they pronounce it. But it's actually, in Sanskrit, it's Yatipur, and they would pronounce it. It's a Bengalicized pronunciation of it, Jatipur, which means the city of the sannyasis, because it's Madhavendra Puri's city. So not by taking sannyas. Just like when I joined the movement, I thought when I took sannyas, that would make me a pure devotee. It didn't work. Because whatever anarthas I had before I took sannyas, they remained. You know, I came out of the sacrifice, swaha, swaha, now Maharaj. And I said, why are these anarthas still here? What happened? Maybe I need another sacrifice. Just like sometimes people say, and sometimes people try to take others away from ISKCON, and they say, the reason you have bad anarthas is because you don't have the right guru. Come to us, you'll get the right guru, and you won't get anarthas. I mean, Hare Krishna. The reason you have anarthas is because you basically haven't gotten rid of them by chanting purely. It's not, don't blame your guru. You know, that's all I need is my disciples blaming me for their anarthas. Dear Gurudev, why didn't you remove my anarthas? What's wrong with you? I reject you. I'm going to someone who can get rid of my anarthas much faster. That's called the LSD philosophy of Krishna consciousness. You want to take a pill and become self-realized. Anyway, so tapasa nayati. No one can become Krishna conscious by taking sannyas. No one can become Krishna conscious. Then there's a whole list there. By becoming a good grahasta, by becoming... by sitting in fire in the middle of this summer. And that's hot in India. You know, in India it's sometimes 45 degrees. Can you imagine surrounding yourself with fire? I just want an air conditioner in India. Or by putting yourself in ice in the middle of winter. Anyone's ever put themselves in ice in the middle of winter? I did. I was in Finland. And the devotees, not to become Krishna conscious, is called the sauna practice. That they'll go in the ice water. You understand? And yeah, they go in the ice water. So I had a competition with someone. I said, who can stay in the ice water longer? You know, men have this competitive spirit to them. So I said, I can do it more than you. So we jumped in the ice water, and gradually I didn't feel my body anymore. Has anyone done this? And then they go into the sauna. And the sauna is like 100 degrees centigrade. Literally. It's dry heat. You stay in there until you can't tolerate it. It's like the material world. And then, you know, Sukha and Dukkha. And then you jump in the water again. Whew, that was good. Then the water becomes miserable. Then you go in the sauna again. The sauna is miserable. Then you go in the water again. What is it called? Chapala Sukha, Bhoga Tyaga, like that. Jai, Shishi Gornatai, Radha Kunji Bihari. Ki Jai. So, anyways, so said by putting yourself in fire in the middle of the summer, ice cubes in the middle of the winter, you're not going to become Krishna conscious. The only way you're going to become Krishna conscious, tapasa nati, vana mahapada vajopi shakam, by taking shelter at the lotus feet, or literally taking a bath, you know, an abhishek from the dust that comes from the lotus feet of pure devotees. So that's our methodology, not austerity. So then you may ask me, so why are you doing austerities if you're speaking like that, Maharaj? You know, you're a hypocrite. You know, so the reason I'm doing austerities is because Palananda Maharaj told me, no, I don't follow astrologer's advice. The reason is that I want, it's a desire to serve Prabhupada and live longer. You understand? That's all. I'm not doing austerities to become more Krishna conscious. I'm doing that, or following that particular diet, so I can live longer to perform service for Krishna. That's the only reason. Otherwise, I'd be sitting down with the rest of you eating pizza. And I would be happy in life. But you see, the austerities in that made me... The test is that if someone's engaged in austerities and they become miserable, that means they shouldn't be doing it. Just like they did a test on gorillas. This is an interesting story. There's this whole scientific test going on right now whether or not people will live longer by caloric restrictions. You ever hear that before? That means by having people eat less, they'll live longer. So first they started with rats. And so they reduced the calories. You know what a calorie is? That the rats were eating by about 50%. The rat lived, you know, 50% longer. I mean, I don't know how long a rat's life is, but it's not as long as our life. But anyway, the rat lived longer. So then they're gradually working their way up to human beings, you know. So they went to gorillas or something like that, and they did it with gorillas too. But when they tried to restrict the caloric intake of a gorilla, the gorilla was miserable. The rat was probably miserable too, but we can't tell the expression on a rat's face, you know. I'm not that expert in reading faces of rats, nor are the scientists. But they, you know, the gorilla who was actually, he lived longer, but he was miserable. You know, the poor gorilla was. And the other gorilla who had as many bananas as he wanted was sitting there, you know, in ecstasy. So obviously the gorilla was not having a higher spiritual taste. So the point is that we're not interested in these restrictions because the restrictions will make the heart hard. You know, unnecessary austerities. And we see that with people. I mean, I've had experience with devotees in the movement who perform austerities and gone on, let's say, an orange diet. And they just become miserable and crazy after some time. I'm sure there have been devotees here who have gone on like real austere diets. And they become really weird, the devotees. Or miserable, or something like that. So that's not going to make you Krishna conscious. However, if it comes as a result of your bhakti, if the austerity comes as a result of bhakti. So in other words, bhakti does not come as a result of austerity. But austerity comes as a result of bhakti, like the six Goswamis of Vrindavan. They were not thinking of eating very little. They were just so absorbed in Krishna's pastimes, they didn't think about eating. It's just like a little child. When a child is out playing with his friends, it may be dinner time, but the child doesn't even hear his parents calling, right? Have you had that experience when you were children? You're playing with your friends, your mother's calling, "It's time for dinner, little Johnny. Little boy, time for dinner." Who wants to come to dinner? This is fun. You know, we're playing, you know, whatever we're playing. The Ramayana story or something like that. So it's like that. The devotee is having so much fun, then automatically they're not concerned. That's renunciation for a devotee. But renunciation doesn't produce bhakti. Not at all. Vairagya does not produce bhakti. Nor does jnana produce bhakti. It's the opposite. Vasudevi Bhagavati. Bhakti Yoga Prayojita Janayati Asu Vairagyam Jnanam Chayada Hoitukam. That's an important verse. From bhakti comes jnana and vairagya. But it's natural. It's not imposed. It's not artificial. Does everyone know that's an important point? It's not artificial. It's not that we should be telling a devotee, "You're not austere enough, Prabhu." Just like that story about the beginning days of the movement, where Prabhupada would always keep a giant barrel of gulab jamuns there. And the devotees would take whenever they wanted. And one devotee said to Prabhupada, "I think we should restrict the devotees. They should only take one a day." And Prabhupada said, "We should restrict you. No one else should be restricted." You understand? Or like myself, when I joined the movement, I would always chant my japa in the prasadam room. And I would reward myself for each round chanted by one Simply Wonderful. So for me, chanting 16 rounds meant 16 Simply Wonderfuls. You know what a Simply Wonderful is? You know, sweet ball. So, I mean, that was those days. You know, we need certain things. So we shouldn't criticize others if they need certain things. Everybody's different. And renunciation happens automatically. It's not something you've got to separately cultivate. Vairagya vidya nija bhakti yoga shiksharta eka purusha parana Shri Krishna Chaitanya Shrira Dari Kripam Bhudir Yastam Aham Papaje. So any other questions or comments? Yes.
Just would like to ask a thing about austerities and that we cannot reach bhakti with this.
That's right.
Clear. But sadhana, is it also austerity? And then we can go with our mind and say, okay, maybe I cannot wake up early in the morning and then I can sleep until 8 or 10 o'clock in the morning or things like that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, the point is, this all has to be approached naturally. If we have someone who wants to get up at 8 o'clock in the morning, we don't impose austerities upon that person. We tell the person, you know, just add a little Krishna to your life, and gradually waking up early, they'll do. I mean, of course. Yeah, you know, there has to be some intelligence, and you make yourself wake up early sometimes. But it's not based on force. It's based on some objective in life. I mean, someone really has to have a vision. If someone is forced to do something, and it's not based on their own objective or goals in life, it won't continue. Like if you're doing things because you have to, you're forced to wake up early, you won't be able to continue doing it for a long period of time. But if you're doing it because you want to be Krishna conscious, you know this is part of the process, then you might say you force yourself, but it's not external force. It's actually coming from the heart because you want something. If you want something enough, you work for it. That's practical. But it's not an external force. It's an intelligent direction of your life. But when we're dealing with others, we never should force others. You know, say, I remember sometimes devotees preach like, they say, well, Prabhupada said, if you don't chant 16 rounds, you're in Maya. I mean, should we go out and tell that to people in the street? What I tell people when I'm interacting with them is that, you know, please try this chanting of Hare Krishna. And some people come to me. I mean, I'm preaching to people here. Actually, even here in Croatia, you know, people say, well, I tried to chant 16 rounds. I was unable. This is not initiated devotee, but I'm not able to chant 16 rounds. And I just say, fix some number. You know, whatever you can do from your heart, practically every day, do. You know, I don't say, you know, well, force yourself to do 16 rounds. Prabhupada said, if you don't chant 16 rounds, you're in a fallen condition of spiritual life. You know, we have to be a little bit understanding of different people's position. Positions. And also, you know, let's say even if a devotee has been in temple and they decide to get married, you know, the devotee should understand that they have a lot of responsibilities that the devotees in the temple don't have. I mean, it's easy for devotees in the temple to say, hey, I haven't seen someone in Mangalarti for 6 months. Well, I mean, the person's working 10 hours a day to make money, gets home completely exhausted at 8 o'clock at night. You know, you're in the brahmachari ashram. You can take naps all day long, you know. It's like, you know, sometimes we see in the temple, it's almost like cows, that after the morning program, everything's really quiet. You can hear a pin drop. And then when it comes time for noon prasadam, all of a sudden everyone appears. It's like if you ever took care of cows, you know, that at a certain time, they're very habitual, the schedules, you know, they go by schedules, they by habit. So they all come, even if they're 5 kilometers away, if they know it's time to eat, the whole herd comes to eat. So, I mean, so one can criticize those, if, you know, people live in the temple, you know, can criticize those outside, you know, why don't they do this, why don't they do that? I mean, you don't understand. You have to be compassionate with what people are going through, you know, taking care of children in their homes. And isn't it? It's hard to take care of children. It's not that you just A child is like a little doll. You take out the batteries and it goes to sleep. It's like an iPod, you know. People think like, the brahmacharis think like that, you know, the children, you just put them down, go to sleep. And the child's asleep for like 10 hours, gets up, okay, okay, daddy, what do you want? Okay. No, it's not like that. So one of my disciples asked me, she said, now you know, I'm getting married, and maybe we have children. I don't want my life to get complicated. And I said, huh? I said, she said, can you bless me? My life doesn't get complicated. I said, I can bless you, but it's not going to work. She said, why does it have to get complicated? I said, well, I don't know. You have to ask some grass about these things. So sometimes, you know, we want to impose austerities, especially the devotees in the temple just want to impose austerities. You know, we want someone who's living on the outside with children to do 40 hours of service a week in the temple, but, you know, it's not really that practical. So, anyway, so austerities have to come from a goal. That's the point I'm making. Then we can impose austerities on ourselves. Then it's not artificial at that point. Just like I said, my goal was to be healthy, so therefore I reduced the diet. But then, the proof there was a natural austerity was that it didn't make me miserable. It's not, you know, the devotees who know me from many years ago when I used to eat tons of cheese and pizza and everything. And am I any more miserable now than I was then? Does anyone remember me from those days? No, no one remembers? Really? Yeah, no, we even that day. Yes, you did. You met me in Bosnia when I was eating anything and everything, as long as it was vegetarian. But, you know, basically, I'm happy because I'm serving Krishna, and it doesn't bother me. If it bothered me, it would be an artificial austerity if I was thinking about it. You know, if it was just on my mind, oh my God, how can I do this anymore? Why Krishna, you know? Look at that. That's a heavenly sound, you know. The heavenly planets. Okay, any other questions or comments? Yeah. Yeah, yeah.
But you said also that it's not only them, it's also devotees who fall into extraction.
Are free from karma, yes.
Yeah, it's free from karma. But now my question is, what is different then from these two groups? Pure devotees and devotees who fall into extraction from pure devotees? Because if you are following all instruction, what is making you that you are not pure?
What makes you not pure? You still have... Well, you still have anarthas. You still have impurities in the heart. But you're following on the basis of intelligence. The pure devotee is following spontaneously. Spontaneous means like it's Mangalarti time and you rush down because you want to see Krishna. Now we're following because it's Mangalarti time. We don't rush down. We stumble down. Because we want to be Krishna conscious and pure and serve our spiritual master, and we want to follow instructions. You know, that's the difference. They're both pure devotional service, but in one case, one is realized, one is doing it spontaneously, and, you know, like Vaidhi and Raghunuga, same thing. But Vaidhi has to be performed because you have a goal. Not simply, if Vaidhi is just rules and regulations and you don't advance, then it's Nimagraha. Then it's just rituals. You understand? Then Vaidhi can actually even be a cause of your falling down from Krishna consciousness. Like, isn't it? Achahara payasacha pajapam niyamagraha. If one is not focused on the goal, the reason they're doing it, trying to develop devotional service in the heart, Prabhupada said devotional service is executed with the subtle body, then it can actually be an impediment. So therefore, we should be thinking of what we're doing while we're doing it. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
Yeah. So anyway, we should be functioning on the intelligence platform. But we're performing pure devotional service, but we're not pure devotees yet. And when you're a pure devotee, then you experience the bhavas. Now we're experiencing bhava rog, the disease bhavas in the material world. Right? Lust, anger, greed, illusion, the diseased emotions. Right? Bhava. And but then you experience pure bhavas. Shuddha bhava. Kabihamahe Rabo Sri Vrindavana. Isn't it? Your mind actually, for a pure devotee, the mind is Vrindavan. The mind is evidence of what Krishna wants. Can we say that our mind is evidence of what Krishna wants? I don't think so. Definitely not. It's not evidence of anything except the modes of nature at this point. Okay? So I think it's time for prasada, right? Time for raw vegetables. Anyways, now you can all eat. Prabhupada said Krishna consciousness means feasting, dancing, you know, philosophy, resting a little bit. It's nice. Don't worry. I used to get frightened when I was a young brahmachari, see people more austere. And I would pray to Krishna, if this is what spiritual advancement means, please, Krishna, never let me become spiritually advanced. Because I would see this devotee, you know, eating very little. I said, you know, I don't want to be spiritually advanced, if this is what it means. But fortunately, Krishna decides which prayers he wants to go along with. Krishna's free will. I'm really happy Krishna has not fulfilled all my prayers. Because some of them were not fantastic in the beginning. Like, Krishna, kill me immediately, you know, so I can go back to Godhead, you know. So really happy that Krishna has free will. It's not like that movie, The Secret, you know, where the universe just does whatever you want it to do. Okay, all glories to His divine grace. Namo Prabhupada, Shri Prabhupada, Ki Jai.